Hello and welcome to the Green Room Golf Course podcast from the British and International Golf Greenkeepers Association. Thanks for listening to this podcast, which sheds a light upon the golf industry and what it takes to maintain a modern course. I hope you enjoy the show.
I'm Sammy Strutt, Head of Member Development for Bigger, and I'd like to welcome you to this Continue to Learn Extra webinar. I'm pleased to welcome Steve Isaac, Director of Sustainability at the RNA, and Dr. Paul Miller, Senior Lecturer, Golf Course Management at SRUC. Golf Course 2030 is the RNA-driven industry initiative that aims to mitigate the challenges we face in building resilience and adaptability into the preparation of golf courses, their condition and playability. The role of the greenkeeper is going to be key in safeguarding our golf courses, and adapting to change is going to be an essential skill. SRUC has been given the task of considering how this may happen, how education needs to reflect the challenges, and how the industry can better support and recognise the greenkeeping profession. Prior to joining the RNA in 2003, Steve was an agronomist at STRI for 18 years. He is responsible for the RNA's advocacy of sustainability and for the operation of its sustainability initiatives. These include Golf Course 2030, Green Links, the Open Sustainability Programme, and support for greenkeeper education. Paul has been a lecturer in greenkeeping and golf course management since 1993. He is qualified in plant sciences and has previously worked in a USGA accredited soil laboratory. He is a regular presenter at Continue to Learn and a contributor to articles for Greenkeeper International. Please feel free to ask questions via the chat function that can be found at the bottom or top of your screen, and we will pose questions on your behalf. Without further ado, I will hand over to you, Steve.
Thanks, Sammy, and welcome everyone. Thanks very much for attending this webinar. Hopefully over the next 50 minutes or so, Paul and I will persuade you how important the Golf Course 2030 initiative is to greenkeepers. I'd like to thank Bigger for giving us this opportunity. And I'd like to thank my co-presenter, Dr. Paul Miller, who a lot of you will know well, for agreeing to join me this afternoon. So let's kick off by just a brief introduction to Golf Course 2030 for those who aren't familiar with it. Golf Course 2030 is all about mitigating the impact of climate change, resource constraints, and regulation on the condition and playability of our golf courses. These are considered to be some of the major challenges facing golf over coming decades, and we're seeing the impacts of them now as well. It was established in 2018, and we now have a program of research, education, and communications in place, which is looking to address these serious challenges. Golf Course 2030 was initiated in Great Britain and Ireland as a pilot program. We felt if we couldn't establish this on our home soil, then we'd struggle when we were trying to take it further afield. And in this pilot program, we have 26 stakeholder organizations who have contributed to bringing this initiative together. And that includes Bigger and over in Ireland, the GCSAI, the Irish Greenkeepers Association. Stakeholders met in September 2018 in Manchester and agreed on the priority issues that Golf Course 2030 should investigate over the next 3 to 5 years. From that meeting, action plans were produced, which highlighted the priority issues, and produced from those a call for research projects, and that was put out in late 2019. If you want more information on the initiative, please visit the RNA website. You'll see the URL at the bottom of the screen, and I'll repeat that at the end of this session. So why is it important to greenkeepers? What about actual action? Well, in late 2019, the RNA commissioned sports marketing surveys to undertake a questionnaire of the golf club management team with regards to their attitudes to the challenges posed by Golf Course 2030. From January through April this year, we awarded research projects to a number of different organisations. And at the moment, we have 14 research projects underway covering a wide range of greenkeeping issues. And I'll talk a little bit more about those a little bit later. To date, and in this first tranche of research, the RNA has invested over £600,000, which will cover those projects over the next 3 years. Some are to be delivered this year, some through 2021, and a very small number, I think only two in 2022. If you want more information on those 14 research projects, again, please visit the RNA website, slightly different URL there, and there you'll find some brief descriptions of those 14 projects. Now that we have the pilot in GB&I well underway, and we've got some actions in place, we're looking to expand Golf Course 2030 beyond our shores, certainly into Europe and even further than that. And we're looking to try and coordinate turf grass and environmental research into golf and to encourage collaboration between research organisations, education providers, and all of the other associations that are stakeholders of this initiative. Over the past 3 months, we've all become sickeningly aware of the COVID-19 pandemic. We seem to talk about nothing more these days. Don't we all wish that we could go back to the days of just talking about Brexit? Now, I have been asked, why don't we incorporate what we need to do through the COVID pandemic into the Golf Course 2030 initiative? And having given this some thought, there are definitely some parallels between the two, but we're hoping that the COVID pandemic will be of fixed duration, whereas the issues that we're addressing with Golf Course 2030, climate change, resource constraints, and regulation are going to be ongoing challenges for decades to come. Having said that, we can take a lot from what's happened over the last few months and what we're likely to see over coming months before we get through this pandemic. Certainly the need for resilience. Businesses who managed to survive this pandemic will have shown this in abundance. The need to be able to adapt course management to the prevailing conditions, reduce staff, essential maintenance only, that certainly required a lot of adaptability from course management teams. If nothing else, hopefully golf clubs now understand better and appreciate their greenkeeping workforce. I don't think anything more positive has come out of this from a course management point of view than us realising the critical importance of the greenkeeping profession. Certainly the value of an educated workforce. That's critical if we're to see that adaptation and resilience. What has been interesting coming out of that essential maintenance and as golfers come back into play has seemed to be the expectations of golfers as they come back to their golf courses. I would like to think that they're more appreciative of what's being presented and are just delighted to be back on golf course. And beyond that, our own expectations of what we want from the golf course, the golf course that we work on, the golf course that provides the employment for all of us, certainly for myself and Paul. Without golf courses, we wouldn't have a job. So there are parallels between the two, but Golf Course 2030 is going to continue just looking at those three major issues that we've highlighted. So what is golf's view of the challenges from climate change, resource constraints and regulation? And what's been our response in terms of developing that research program through the Golf Course 2030 initiative? As I said earlier, in late 2019, we commissioned SMS Incorporated to undertake a survey of the golf club team professionals. Now, this was supported by Bigger, by the GCSEA, by the Club Manager Associations, and by the PGA. And we were delighted to receive good responses from 589 course managers, club managers, and club professionals. And I was advised by SMS that this was enough of a response to make the outcomes of this survey valid from a statistical point of view. We had a good range of course types represented by those responses, both in terms of their ownership, but also in terms of the nature of golf course, from parkland through links, heathland, downland, the like. And what did we ask those professionals in relation to the Golf Course 2030 initiative? Well, we were looking at climate resource and regulation in terms of the perception of their threat to golf, the concern for your own golf facility, not just to the game itself, any impacts that had already been seen that had an effect on course condition and playability, and the readiness of golf facilities to actually address those issues. Now, this slide shows a scoring system that was invented by sports marketing surveys. Anything scoring zero suggests that those responding didn't see the issue as a problem for golf facilities at present, and that they were all well prepared to address them. A score of 100 suggests that the issue was seen as a very severe threat that was experienced widely, and that golf courses just weren't prepared to address at all. As you can see, none of the issues that were put to this survey were considered to be a zero or 100 score. And if we look at the issues that the stakeholders, the 26 different organizations, had outlined at the very start of this process, we split them down into climate change, resource constraints, and regulation. And under climate change, we're looking mainly at flooding, drought, and coastal erosion. In terms of the resources, water was a big one. We also looked at sand and gravel availability, pesticides, and the greenkeeping workforce. From the point of view of regulation, it was really water and pesticides that were the main issues that were considered. As you can see from this graph, the biggest scorers were pesticide availability and flooding. And I think we've all had experience of those over the last decade or so, and probably an increasing witnessing of flooding events with changing weather patterns, but also concerns about pesticide availability and how we're going to control the diseases, pests and weeds that we see on our golf courses. So this survey gave us supportive information to put out that call for research proposals. And let's see what type of research projects came out of that process. So the range of projects covered those three major issues. And I've broken them down into some fairly straightforward categories here. First one being integrated turf management, looking at sustainable options for the management of diseases, pests, and weeds. And obviously things like worm control, leather jackets, chafer grubs, and increasingly diseases are part and parcel of the projects that were approved in that category. Water management was highlighted in the SMS survey and by the stakeholders when they discussed priorities for research. And we have one major research program on water management, which will look at drainage as well as irrigation. Grass selection is very important for virtually everything related to golf course management. And this was the latest project that was approved, and it's the decision-making process for grass selection. And it's important to realize that a lot of these projects are about process, not giving prescriptive answers. And certainly that relates to this decision-making process for grass selection project. There is a sand and gravels project in there, looking at future supply and sustainable alternatives. Now, this didn't score very highly in the SMS survey, but when you think that some supplies of sands, which we use for our golf courses, are likely to run out within 30 years, then I think you can see that it is a priority that we need to investigate. We've all heard about the issues that coastal golf courses are facing with erosion and the management of dune systems. So we have a number of coastal management projects. And we also have a project on standards for course condition and playability and in relation to the greenkeeping workforce. Those are the projects that Paul is going to consider in the next section of this presentation. And as I've said before, if you want to learn a little bit more about each of these 14 projects, then please visit the RNA's website at the URL that's up there on the screen. Right, Paul, it's your turn. I'll now hand over to you to talk about those projects and the greenkeeping workforce.
Yes, of course. Yes. So thanks very much. And can also extend the thanks to Sammy for the invitation and Steve as well to come and do this. And I'm flattered and pleased to be able to make this contribution. So yes, we as an organisation at SRUC, obviously, many of you will know us better as Elmwood College. We had a name change about 8 years ago, but obviously greenkeeper education is the thing that we've been doing for a long, long time. And we felt that these projects, the two about greenkeeper education and preparing the workforce and so on, were the ones that would play to our knowledge and experience and everything like that. So we were absolutely delighted to be able to bring these ones and undertake these. So that's really good. Well, from our point of view, we're chuffed about that. So thanks to the RNA for awarding us these. Steve, could we go to the next slide, please? So this slide here, this is another one that Steve has drawn from the survey that he had there. And this is about the level of concern that exists among greenkeepers, if we like, or greenkeepers, golf course managers, and whether or not we have enough people of the right caliber coming into the industry, whether we're able to keep them and whether or not they're coming to the appropriate level of training. And you can see from this, if we go to the red one is the general club managers and the blue is the PGA professionals. They seem less concerned about the availability of a good greenkeeping team, good greenkeeping resource, if we want to use that word, than do committees, and particularly ourselves as turf management stroke greenkeeping. So we seem to be concerned about this. And when we look at the agenda of Golf Course 2030, and we look ahead that decade or so, and even the changes which are coming on us now and have been coming for a number of years, there are certainly some really big challenges in there. The job isn't getting easier, the communication of the job isn't getting easier. And we all know that greenkeeping is a highly technical and demanding profession. And we need to, I think, try and get that across as well to others who work within the industry and those who play golf. Steve, can we go to the next one, please? So this one, Steve, do you want to talk to this? This one's actually about a project that the STRI and Myers Co are doing.
Yeah, certainly. No problem, Paul. The STRI have been given a project looking at golf green quality standards, and Myers Co are looking at the quality standards for the golf course beyond the greens. We felt it was important to have a project within Golf Course 2030 that looked at why we might want to set standards, what might the process be towards setting standards for playability and course condition. And the main reason for doing this is that if we're going to monitor the impacts of climate change, resource constraints and regulation, we have to have a benchmark against which we can make that comparison over the coming years and decades. So we need to have a process by which clubs can set their own realistic standards depending on their own resources, the situation of their golf course in terms of its soils, its location, all the rest of those variables that make each individual club so different from one another. So that's why we set up these projects. Certainly the deliverables will provide a process by which clubs can look at their own golf course and see how they might set standards for conditioning and playability. But the outcome of these projects will not be prescriptive in themselves. They will not set red lines as to what a golf facility has to achieve. And I think that's very important, because this has to be an individual effort that involves the whole management team as well as club members. There will also be information on how those standards can be measured, and hopefully this will help to set objectives for the greenkeeping workforce and make the course manager very aware of what the club expects from the golf course, so they can set up their management programs to try and achieve those objectives. So hopefully that's covered off those, Paul.
Thank you.
I'll leave you to get on to the actual...
excuse me. Yeah, so thank you for that, Stephen. Yes, I think this is an interesting thing that's happening, because a lot of people are measuring now, and I think measurement of quality parameters has been led largely through what's been happening on the championship venues. But it's not at all unusual for guys to be working with moisture meters, clegg hammers, pogos and so on. And I think this is sort of trying to round it up and say, well, look, what we're measuring for, over what time period are we measuring, how do we gauge success in our programs and so on. And so an interesting project, and I'm going to be interested in what Miles Cohen, the STRI, come up with on that one. So this one that's on the screen now, the education for the greenkeeping workforce. Yes, this is a thing, and we've talked about this a lot with students past and present, and with Stephen setting up the project, and with a preliminary project that we did on the action plan. And looking ahead and saying, well, if in a decade's time, but actually developing slowly as time passes, we're going to have these additional complications and complexities to the profession, are we going to be able to deal with them with the knowledge, skills and competences that we are currently have, and that we in the colleges and education side of the industry are providing you with and bringing you to those levels? And we need to think really long and hard about that, about whether or not the current offering is sufficient to equip us all for the future, and particularly those of you at the sharp end working on golf course management. So I'll talk in the next slide actually about what we've done on this, but that was one of the things that we really needed to do. And then what we need to do, of course, is look at the existing curriculum that we have. So when we say curriculum, we mean all the programs, so NVQ, SVQ levels 2 and 3, national certificates, HNC and D, foundation degrees, and the degree at Myers Co, the turfgrass science degree that they offer, and say, are we capturing within a reasonable pathway of education for someone coming into greenkeeping, are we equipping that person with the skills and competences that they're going to need as they go through their career? And I mean, it's one of the things I've absolutely loved about my career in education to date, is watching students coming in at 17 and 18 years old, and in the blink of an eye, a quarter of a century has gone past, and these guys are holding down fantastic jobs and doing a wonderful job. And we obviously need to continue to support that as time passes. There's an additional thing in this, though, and that's looking back at those green lines in that graph that we had up 2 or 3 minutes ago. And that is, we're not able, or it doesn't look as if we're able, to recruit and retain greenkeepers adequately. What are the barriers to entry to a career into greenkeeping and golf course management? And we've got an exercise, a couple of things that we're doing in there around about perceptions of what the job is. And again, I'll come back to that. Once we do all of that work, then, you know, there's no point writing a report, putting it in a drawer and forgetting about it. We need to communicate that out to all the people in golf who are involved in these decisions, and work hard to ensure that we all know what it is that you're going to have to be able to do, and that we all know what's going to be involved in bringing people to that place. Additionally, part of that, and it might be one of the barriers to entry or motivations, is the whole issue around salaries and remunerations. And again, we've been undertaking recently, one of my colleagues at SRUC, Stephen Maitland, some of you will know Stephen, has done, I would say, probably about the first half of that exercise, and it's been an interesting thing that he's done. So yes, context, the context of the future is a complex one and a challenging one. And this is, I feel, quite an important piece of work. Kind of if we go back to the late 70s where Walter Woods and these guys were writing the first Greenkeeper programs, I think we're at that point and we need to press the accelerator pedal a little bit on this as well. We've done a good bit of this work already in that we've had three significant meetings when we discussed, we invited people who we knew and trusted, and I don't mean trusted them to say what we wanted them to say, I actually trust them to say the opposite, to speak their mind, to tell us what they really think about what we do in colleges, where their gaps are when they've gone out to work, and so on. And that's been really useful. We've done that with one meeting. We just ducked under the coronavirus deadline and had that in the first week of March. And then we had a couple more online ones afterwards. And I'd be delighted if any of you wanted to email afterwards and say, look, I would love to cast my eye over what you've done and what you've produced in terms of paperwork and give an opinion back, because it's not getting it right for us in education, it's trying to get it right for everyone in golf, and feedback's really important to that. And we had within these meetings, we set them up through these four pillars of sustainability. So I've been working in and around this with the scholarship, the RNA scholarship program, for a long time. And I'm aware of these four pillars, although they all overlap and everything else. And we set up a set of questions and discussions through the day. And we came up really with things in three major categories, or I classified them in three major categories when I reviewed the notes. And the first category is probably what I would say has become quite a well-established and traditional view of what golf course management is and greenkeeping. And that is that it's all about the turf, it's all about the grass. So of course, and naturally, there's a big area in here around turf management, and I've taken at the top there, and I won't go through all of these individually, but effects of climate change, unusual water and weather patterns and so on, what that means for disease pressure, understanding disease cycles, perhaps using the growth degree days, the modelling, perhaps all of that. We've also put in there, as you can see, playing performance, setting objectives for that. That's what I would call the turf management bit. And this has to be underpinned with all the usual things about soils and drainage and irrigation and all of the tools that you use in order to produce good quality turf. But as the levels go up, I think we need to understand more in the theories and science of those things. And we will try, I think, if we've got this right, to capture that within this section of it. And I wonder sometimes if this is what people looking at greenkeepers think it's all about. It's all about the grass. And you'll have all heard it, and I've heard it 100 times. Oh, do you have to go to college to learn to cut grass? Really, is that all that we do? Well, we all know that it isn't, but we all hear it on a regular basis, I'm sure. The second theme that came out of these conversations was very much around management and people. So resource management, including the finance and keeping financial records and all of those kinds of things. But the guys that we spoke with also felt that they don't really understand how businesses work. They don't understand marketing, profit loss, those kinds of things, cash flow, those what some might think are simple aspects of business. We've got massive things in there, leadership and communication, change management and motivating staff. Well, this is a big period of change, and these are really, really important skills for people within greenkeeping and golf course management. And perhaps, I'm not sure what weight would be given to these by people who didn't know the job. I'll say honestly, in Elmwood, we've tried to capture these within our HNC and HND, which are very much golf course management, which would be opposed to other qualifications, which might be about turf grass science, really giving almost all of the weight within an educational program to the agronomics and the science of things. So we've tried to go with this, and I think another interesting aspect to this is when we look at the programme that SAMI puts on in Harrogate every year, I've contributed to that many times talking about soils and plant diseases and so on the agronomic side. But when you look at the other seminars which are on, a lot of them are about these skills and they're really popular. So it's a kind of a recognition that even once you're in work, that perhaps there's catch up to be done in learning about these things in addition to learning about the maintenance of turf and that side of the job. So yes, that's an interesting area to me and something that we shouldn't overlook, I don't think. This isn't coming from me, of course. This is coming from our colleagues and our people that we met with. And so this is another one that we talked about, interestingly, within all of the groups. And this is looking perhaps at the bigger picture and the business operating environment. So we do a little bit of work on this within the HND, and some of you will be familiar with it. But we talk about these pest factors, political, economic, social and technical factors, and things that are happening. The COVID is a really good example. It's not a political thing, but there are political, social, economic factors very much wrapped up in this. And it's about how that might affect our business, but how a change of government, a change of taxation, all sorts of things, policies that government might have about sport and fitness and reducing obesity and all of that kind of stuff. And a third one, or a second one rather, within this was something that the guys said was that they really were not embedding sustainability enough into the curriculum. They couldn't tell you what those four pillars were, and they couldn't define and talk about sustainability at any great length. We all have a notion that it's about perhaps reducing pesticide use or managing our water more carefully or something like that, but having a holistic view of sustainability isn't there yet in what these people have learned or are learning with us at the moment. And this last one, the study of human social relationships and institutions, that's just one that we did talk about a little bit, and one that's close to my heart. I studied, in addition to my plant sciences, sport and society and how government treats sport and so on, and where we are with what is a golf club and what are the relationships and the social institutions of a golf club and the expectations that come along with that amongst many many members, ourselves in greenkeeping and so on. So there's quite a lot there. Whether it will ever make it onto a curriculum and into a program, I don't know, but it would be an area of interest to some. So we wrote a report as a result of that series of meetings, and we've shared it out with industry bodies, those who are among the stakeholders that Steve identified that came to the initial meeting 2 years ago. So that includes BIGA through your representatives there, through the club managers, the PGA, the Association of Independent Turf Agronomists, RIPTA, and so on. And I would say that the response has been positive, although not universally positive, and that's fine too. We need to take everything on board and tailor all of this to be right. And then we need to do this comparison exercise, as I've said, and build a curriculum from that. And I'm wondering things like, for example, would it be that a Clegg hammer or a moisture meter becomes as important a piece of kit as a mower or a switch or a rake or a fertilizer spreader to a level 2, level 3 greenkeeper? Should we be bringing in technology, data recording, producing graphs and all that kind of thing very early into the careers of these young people rather than doing it as CPD later? But all of that will come. We haven't done that work yet. That's really where we are with the first of the projects that we've been taking on at SRUC. And Steve, could we have the next slide, please? So this is the next one, and this is one that's really, really interesting to me. And this is, what do they think that we do? This is about what do our golfers, our club managers, our committee people, our professionals, what do they think that we do? And we want to ascertain that by survey as to where they think the skills are and and what a greenkeeper golf course manager does within his or her day. And assuming that we find within that, assumption is a dangerous thing, so I probably shouldn't assume anything, but we want to try and create some small learning programs, perhaps some short online programs, depending what we find, to actually say, no, this is what they do, and to give these people some more accurate learning and a more accurate impression of what we do. So we're in the early stages of this. It's got a longer duration, and actually preparing the survey has been knocked a little bit through COVID and just the disruption that's brought, but we're working on this, and I'm looking forward to this one. And I do recall, I may not be right about this, but I do recall quite some years ago that somebody telling me that if you want to serve on a Greens committee in Sweden, you have to have done some CPD training with the National Golf Association there. I'm not 100% sure about that, but I think that would be a great idea if we had something along those lines. And I've alluded to this one already, that we ourselves don't think that we're attracting or retaining enough of the right people into greenkeeping and golf course management. And this is quite difficult to ascertain what is the problem, but I think there is a historical perspective in golf that the people who play golf are gentlemen, and then of course the early professional golfers were not considered as gentlemen, they were considered as artisans, and they also made clubs and they kept greens and they designed golf courses and so on. But those two societal groups never met. And when I look at golf now, I think that there's still a lot of those attitudes within the game, that greenkeepers are not considered to be professionals. They're considered to be, if I can use this phrase, artisan working men, men who work, and women, men who work with their hands. And then we've got this whole notion I've just said, you know, do you have to go to college to learn to cut grass? Is there a real skill required to be a greenkeeper? And how about salary and remuneration and career development? And in one of the early preliminary parts of this project, I had a really interesting conversation with somebody that said, well, for something to be considered to be a real career, it has to have those three elements. It has to have the recognition of a real skill and set of competences. It has to be remunerated appropriately. And it has to allow career development. And I think we've got quite a lot of that in greenkeeping. I think we know that, but I'm not sure the rest of the world knows that. So these are the areas that we're going to try and explore in that project. And we're really interested in what that throws up. So, you know, early insights, what do they think of us? So one of these things, and it's kind of obvious when somebody says it to you, but the fact that the greenkeeper's compound is often a distance from the clubhouse, that your hours of work are different from the hours of work to people who are working in the clubhouse and perhaps where the office is based and so on. That physical setup doesn't actually allow, and unless you make it happen, it doesn't allow daily good communication and good interaction. And people have freely acknowledged that the communication aspect of it is very much a two-way street. And so that's something that we would say there's a poor communication culture. This doesn't apply to everybody, but it's an overview. And that would be equally a club manager or secretary seeking out the greenkeeper for a conversation as much as the other way about. There is a poor communication culture. And amongst our fellow industry professionals, so club managers, golf professionals, in many instances, the head greenkeeper, golf course manager, is not considered as a part of the management team of the organisation. That's somebody who takes instruction rather than contributes to management. And we think from these early conversations that that is underpinned by a poor understanding of the skills and competences that are required to do the job properly. So we've got a big exercise here, a big task to try and realign some of that. And then what do we think of ourselves? And we're very lucky, I've had some super conversations with Bega during this process, and Bega's education review that's been kind of happening in parallel, probably much of it a little before ours, acknowledges three things. It acknowledges knowledge and skills, and we've been doing that for 30 or 40 years now, possibly longer, informally. But something that I think is really interesting that's come up now is behaviours. How do we behave, and what are the perceptions of us as greenkeepers in the ways that we behave? And that's new, and I think it's interesting to see it there. So in the time I've been in the industry, and I don't want this to feel as if we've stood still since greenkeeping first became a thing 150 years ago. We absolutely haven't. And I've seen huge changes since I came into the industry in the late 80s. And that change is only going to continue. And we've got a great opportunity here to drive that change in a direction that's good for our bit of the industry. And in my opinion, therefore, good for the whole of golf. So I'm really excited about what lies in front of us. So that's my bit done, I think, Steve. Thank you.
Okay, Paul, thanks very much for that. I now remember why we awarded SRUC and you these projects. I'm going to be fascinated to see what you come out at the end of them with. Really interesting stuff.
Thank you.
I thought I'd like to wrap up this webinar just by giving you a bit of an insight into what is planned for Golf Course 2030 through the rest of this year and going through 2021. So, I mean, as Paul has mentioned throughout, communication is absolutely key to all of this. And this year we'll see four articles on Golf Course 2030 published in Greenkeeper International. Two have already been published, I think, in the April and June issues. One is with Carl now, ready for the next issue, and there'll be a final one towards the end of the year. The first three looking at that SMS survey, and each article looking at one of the aspects that were investigated there. The first one was climate change, second one resource constraints, and the one yet to be published is on regulation. And then the final article will look at the research program and how that reflects the results coming out of that survey. That's only part of the communication package, and obviously this webinar is part of that communications effort. And certainly I'd like to see over the next year or so more of these webinars where I invite project managers from the other 12 projects to explain what they're doing and the progress they're making with those projects, and to invite Paul back when he has further progress to report on the two projects that he's responsible for. Those research programs will continue throughout 2020. I think we've got three that are due to be delivered this year. As I said before, a couple in 2022, so the remainder, the bulk of them, will probably be delivered in 2021, unless COVID causes even more delays than we're seeing at the moment. And currently I've been delighted, we have regular calls, team meetings with the project managers of all the projects. And most of them are looking at some delay in delivery, but only by weeks and months. So I don't think we're too far behind on the time frame for the delivery of those research projects. Education will certainly form an important part of explaining Golf Course 2030, the projects and the results that come out of it. And we look forward to working very closely with Bigger on the education front in coming months. Now, this all started with a national plan being developed, a national Golf Course 2030 plan for GB&I back in early 2019. And since then, we've been working with national governing bodies of golf and national greenkeeper associations across Europe to produce other national and regional plans. And if you look at the RNA website, you'll see that we already have them for Scandinavia. We have one for Spain. And we have one for Singapore. You may appreciate that Singapore isn't actually in Europe, but it's where the RNA has its Asia Pacific office, and it seemed to make sense to us to have a Singapore plan. Over the last few months, I've been working with other countries, and in the not too distant future, up on the RNA website, you'll see plans being published for Italy, for Germany, for the Netherlands, for Portugal. So we are developing those plans, and for France, I mustn't forget France. We are developing this program to look beyond GBNI. And the main reason for that is the research issue. At the moment, research in turf grass management and environmental issues related to golf courses is very sparse outside of the US. If you look at the USGA's history in funding research, then it's quite significant. It's been going on for quite a few years. And we would like to think that Golf Course 2030 is the start of us seeing far more investment into research across the rest of the world. But that has to be coordinated. We can't have half a dozen different countries or different regions doing the same piece of research work just because they feel that they can't trust the work that's being done by their neighbours. So that's going to be a very important part of our work coming out of those Golf Course 2030 plans over the next 18 months or so. So if you'd like to learn more about the Golf Course 2030 initiative, please visit the RNA website. And there's also a projects page, which you can access through the top navigation channel. If you're interested in learning more about Golf Course 2030, maybe you'd want to ask us questions about it, or you might want to actually get involved in some of the process or some of the projects that are currently underway, then please get in touch with us through this dedicated email address, which is golfcourse2030@randa.org. And that finishes this webinar. My thanks again to Paul for participating in this. Your assistance very much welcomed and some really interesting stuff. I'd like to thank you again for viewing this webinar and to Bigger for putting it on. And I'm glad to see we've awoken Samantha from her slumbers. And I believe she might have a few questions for us.
Yeah, we've got a couple of questions that have come in. I think the first one is probably for Paul. Do you think there'll be a degree program available for golf course management? And if so, over what time scale?
Thanks for that, Sammy. Yes, a good question. Personally, we've had a degree, but SRUC have never had one. Elmwood have never had one. And we've had the degree in turf science at Myers Co for a long time now, probably 20 years plus. I alluded to this in what I was saying. I think there's space for a degree, not just in the science, but in the fuller set of skills and knowledge and understanding that's required in golf course management. And my instinct is that, yes, there will be one. I think it would be, internally, we would have to get the green light to do some curriculum development, obviously, and there's costs and things attached to that. But I think it would be in SRUC's interest to do it. And it would be one of these 2+2 degrees that they call it. So first year HNC, second HND, and then a year 3-4. And I think we'd probably be in a position to start the new curriculum probably in 2 years. That would be September 22. Oh. And it would be a modified HNC to start with for the first year, if you know what I mean, trying to incorporate some of these new things. Yeah. Mm. Our wheels don't turn very quickly in education, I'm afraid.
I have to say I found it very informative, and I figure that I know quite a lot about Golf Course 2030, but I've been furiously writing notes all the way through this for content for Continue to Learn. So watch this space, because both of you will probably be getting emails, a flurry of emails from me over the next few weeks. Is there a concern about promoting standards for golf courses? Do you think it will create a rod for our own backs? Don't know who wants to
kick off on this one, Paul.
Yeah,
I think there is a concern there. And I think unless the process is handled properly and sensitively, then yes, I think there is a danger there. The course manager, the greenkeeping team would have to be heavily involved at a club in setting standards. They would absolutely have to be individual to that club, and they would have to be totally realistic. There is no point setting out ambitious standards if you have no chance in actually reaching those goals. So yes, I think there are dangers, and I would expect that the research information coming out of those projects will fully explain those concerns and how to avoid falling into that trap. Don't know if you've got anything to add, Paul.
Yes, I would. I think it's a really good question. And I think there is an anxiety about setting targets. In fact, at the workshop I did at Harrogate this year, we had that conversation, should we put target values into a course policy document? And the room was quite split on it. And the argument against was, well, if the members know a number, are they going to beat us over the head with that number? So we're all thinking about stint meters, aren't we? And then say, okay, so now we've got six numbers to be hit with rather than just one. So I think there is an anxiety about that. And particularly if we've had this led by championship golf, where standards are appropriate to championship golf, but not necessarily to your local parkland just down the road on much heavier soils. So yes, I think there's an anxiety, but I think those underpinning skills of good objective setting, communication, and so on, perhaps some engagement with other people working in golf, for them to understand more than they might do at the moment, are all parts of getting that right.
Well, I think that, you know, the aim of this and very much Bigger's mission is to raise the profile of greenkeeping and the role of the greenkeeper within the golf club. You know, that's what we're here for, and it feels that this project is very much supporting that. So we're excited to be part of it with them, along with all of the stakeholders.
I think that's an interesting point, Sammy, because I think you'll find in most golf clubs, the club manager will probably be setting some standards. They'll be looking at food and beverage. Mm-hmm. They'll be looking at the professionals. They'll be looking at the rounds played, the income generated. And they'll be setting some standards and some targets for their workload. So why shouldn't that apply to the golf course? But as I say, it has to be appropriate, has to be relevant, and it has to be realistic. And I think the points that Paul has brought out are very relevant to that discussion.
Absolutely. After all, the golf course is the asset of the business, isn't it? So that's the reason for the business in the first place. I'm excited to see how we move on with this and the results of all of the research and what comes out. A question that I have around about the COVID pandemic and the research, do you think it will change or alter some of the results of the research?
Paul, you better answer that.
Well, it's going to delay some of the findings a little bit. I'm not sure, Sammy, that it will, although I think something that has come up that's been, I've seen it on social media, is the notion of quality standards. And when there had been no golf for whatever it was, 6 or 8 weeks, people were just desperate for golf. And I think they were much more forgiving of perhaps some weeds or some discoloration or the grass a little bit longer or greens running a bit slower than they had been before. So in a sense, we had a little insight into what, if resources become less available to us and we don't have all the tools that we currently use, like, you know, water or fungicides, weed killers and things like that, then perhaps that was a little insight into what we might have to learn to accept. And I don't want to start using words of good quality, poor quality. I can see Steve smiling, and a number of the attendees will have been to Askernish and seen a golf course that doesn't really meet modern standards in terms of visual appearance particularly, but it gives an unforgettable round of golf. And so I wonder sometimes what it's all about. And yes, we'll see about that. But that would be my one thing, Sammy, is that little insight into what is achievable when there is less available to do it with.
I'm afraid I'm an old cynic, Sammy. And I'm afraid that once we get through the pandemic and we get back to something more normal, then human nature suggests that golfers will be as demanding as they ever were. And I think that's why we need this research and these research programs. We need to have the tools that we can argue against that, and we can put to them what the reality is and what they need to accept moving forward.
Couple of questions. I've got a nice comment here from Erwin, who I believe is an RNA scholar. Askernish will always be my favourite golf on earth. And despite the non-conventional condition, well said, Paul. So there we go.
Thank you.
We've got a question around all the different qualifications across the nations in the UK. Obviously, England has apprenticeships, and they've got a different standard to the other countries within the UK. Not sure whether this is a statement or a question, really. How are we going to be able to address that going forward with potentially different greenkeepers being trained in different parts of the country have got different types of qualifications?
Well, from my point of view, it's that, you know, I think, sorry, I'm not expressing this very well. I think when you come into greenkeeping, you have to learn the skills and introductory levels of greenkeeping. And the education is there to support that and to put in place the underpinning knowledge and those kinds of things. And I honestly think that regardless of how we dress that up in qualifications, the skills, competences, knowledge, behaviours are probably more or less equivalent. It's when we come into these things that is an HND in Scotland equivalent to a foundation degree in England. It's that sort of argument that makes it difficult for students to progress perhaps from one country to the other. So to come from the Scottish system to complete the degree at Myers Co or something. There are structures and equivalences that you can find within, for example, the SQA or some of the awarding bodies, I'm sure, in England that try and address that. But inevitably, there will be gaps and inconsistencies in it. But I don't think we're having a unified system anytime soon around education between England and Wales and Scotland and Northern Ireland. So I think we're going to have to learn to live with it. Perhaps those of us that work in the colleges, you know, we need to be able to give the students who want to progress a good and solid answer and perhaps a bridging course or something like that should it be required. But it's really our problem. I don't think it's necessarily the industry's problem.
Okay. So who do you envisage funding the research which may come out of all of this? Well, we've got a list of suggested funding bodies here, the home unions, associations, federations, the RNA, or suppliers, manufacturers. And who would be carrying out the research that is required?
Well, I think we're obviously committed to funding research in relation to Golf Course 2030, but we will certainly be looking for partners. I don't think we can rely solely on the RNA to fund all of this. And it's not just partners bringing in money. It's services in kind, so it's time, it's expertise. So I think we'll be looking to work with a whole range of organisations moving forwards. And at the end of the day, anyone involved in golf, these issues are going to have an impact on everybody. So it's in everybody's interest to at least engage with the process through whatever they can bring to it.
Okay, and one final thing, just to remind us how our golf club could get involved with the Golf Course 2030 initiative.
Yeah, well, there'll be a number of the projects are undertaking surveys and questionnaires. They can get involved in that. A number of the project managers are directly being contacted through us by golf clubs who have looked at the website, said, you know, those are issues that are affecting us, and we've put them in touch with the project managers. So for things like case studies, I've given you the dedicated email address. If anyone wants to learn more about Golf Course 2030 and how they might get involved, please get in touch with us.
Great. Okay. Well, with that, we're on just after 5 o'clock. So we've been going for just over an hour. So I will bring this webinar to a close. I hope that you've enjoyed today's webinar. An announcement for you, the Continue to Learn Extra webinars are taking a summer holiday after today. And we will be returning on Tuesday, the 8th of September. Please visit the What's On page of the Bigger website for further details on the future events. I'd like to thank you for joining us. I'd like to thank Steve and Paul for all of their help in producing today's webinar and for the valuable information that is given to us all. Many thanks.
Thank you, Sammy. Thanks a lot.
Thanks, Paul.
The Green Room Golf Course podcast is produced by myself, Carl Hansel, on behalf of the British and International Golf Greenkeepers Association. For questions, comments and concerns, you can get in touch with me by emailing carl@bigger.co.uk. That's Carl with a K. You can also join the conversation on social media using @greenroombigger. And we've also got a Facebook page where all the latest notices, news releases and information from Bigger can be found. We're also on Instagram using @bigger_HQ. Subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. The more people know about the sports turf industry, the more understanding they will have about the hard work of Bigger members and other greenkeepers. And speaking of Bigger membership, if you're inspired by what you hear to progress your career in greenkeeping, then a major first step is signing up to the association. The opportunities for career development are countless and potentially life-changing, such as volunteer opportunities at major tournaments and educational opportunities across Europe and the USA. Don't forget, if you're a golfer and you've got any questions about anything you hear on the podcast, have a conversation with the greenkeepers at your club. They've got the expertise to explain what's happening at the course and how it fits into the team's long-term vision to improve playability and enjoyment of the facility.